All right, we're going to jump in here. I want to give a summary of where we've been just briefly in this series so far. We've been talking about what it means to be all in, like when it comes to our faith, when it comes to following Jesus. And one of the things that we've learned is that Jesus, he actually meets us where we are, as we are, that before we believe all the right things, before we get our lives all straightened out and presentable, that Jesus, in his grace, he meets us exactly there, where we are. And then he invites us to begin following him from wherever we are. And really part of that, a large part of it, comes down to our willingness to have the courage to take the next step. Whatever that step is, he's put in front of us, that we would trust him and follow him with that. And then last week we talked about how the goal for Jesus, it really wasn't religion. It wasn't like religious performance. The point for Jesus wasn't that we check off all of the right rules and rituals and regulations. That Jesus actually rescues us. He sets us free from religion. And instead, he just invites us to stay close to him. That for Jesus, it's about relationship, which means, good news, there's nothing to like memorize. Okay? He sets us free from like this continual cycle of rules and then feeling guilty because we're not following the rules, and then finding rituals to make the guilt go away and to make God happy. And Jesus says, I've come to put an end to all of that. And I want to invite you to have relationship with me. If you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to Mark chapter 8. And last week we looked at a whole bunch of different passages, and today we're just going to focus in on just this one. Now, as many of you here have discovered, there are a lot of benefits to following Jesus. Did you know that? That he wants to actually transform us from the inside out. Not because, we have to change in order to be saved, but because we want to. That when you open yourself up to the love of God expressed through Jesus, that's what love does. It actually invites a loving response in return. It creates a space for us to then move toward him and to be changed and transformed in the process. And that's happened to many of us, and we've experienced the benefits. Some of you, you're way more generous than you used to be because of Jesus and your association with him, with your time, your stuff, your money. Others of you, because you know we're trying to stay close to Jesus, that means the things that he's about, that we're about, and so as a result, you're way more aware of the other in the world than you used to be. The marginalized, the poor, the oppressed. That you realize that the things that move Jesus to compassion and action actually stir your heart. And so you can begin to see, not overnight, but over time, you begin to change. Does everyone know what I'm talking about? You look in the mirror and recognize, hey, that's a different person looking back. Maybe you're more patient, you're more forgiving, you're a better friend or spouse or boss or employee. And not that you'll do everything perfectly, but I think many of us have experienced this because we follow Jesus, we've actually avoidable regret and pain. And you start to realize, as I follow him and he shapes my life, then as I make decisions and my priorities and my relationships and my finances and all these different areas, here's a crazy thought, Jesus actually knew what he was talking about. And I'm benefiting because of that. You experience the blessings, the benefits of trusting him. How many of you here have stories where as a result of trusting God with something, you did something his way instead of your way, which is what you really wanted to do. And then in hindsight, looking back, you realize your way would have been a disaster. It would have been regret and pain and all kinds of things. Jesus says that in following him, in building your life on him, it's like you're building your house on a rock rather than on sand. Which means when the storms come, and they will, that you'll make it. That being rooted and being grounded in him, you will actually have the resources in him that you need to keep going. And maybe you've seen people like this. They've gone through things you can't even imagine. You say to yourself, I have no idea what I would do if I went through whatever it is. And yet you can point to individuals who have gone through really difficult things, and yet they've done so with grace, with dignity, with hope, because of their faith in Jesus. And it's like, that is just incredible. So the point is, there are all these tangible blessings, benefits to being a follower of Jesus, and we could go on and list more, and many of us have experienced lots of these things I've talked about firsthand. But there is also a cost associated with following Jesus. And that's what I want to talk about today. Now, just kind of put that aside for a moment. You guys know how when somebody is trying to sell you on something, like they're trying to get you to do something differently or to buy their product or their service, generally the approach that's taken is to hype all of the benefits up front and then sort of not mention the cost until the end. You kind of tack that on really quick at the end. Infomercials, do they still have those? Probably, right? They're masters at this, right? They say, we're going to convince you that you cannot live without this product, this pasta strainer or whatever it is. And then we're also going to tell you, you can't find it anywhere else, not sold in stores, so supplies are limited to create this urgency. And then finally, after you've been watching it for 30 minutes, they get around to the price. And, you know, you're kind of preparing yourself, and then they give you the normal price, and then they begin slashing the normal retail price. But wait, there's more. So they're really good at this. But the message there is, you know, in whatever, a lot of times marketing, advertising is, you cannot live without this dish soap. This is going to change and transform the essence and the being and the core of your life. I noticed this, by the way, I was thinking of infomercials, and that made me think of, like, those knives look amazing, right? They really do look sharp. And then that reminded me that when I was in college, I sold Cutco, just hounded all my friends and family. And I will still say they're the best knives ever. Side point. But if I were just to call up random people and, you know, leads on the phone and say, hey, I've got an $1,100 set of knives with your name on it. That wouldn't really get me very far, would it? No, I got to get in your house and do the whole demonstration. And once I start cutting that leather like butter, once I bring out the kitchen shears and cut a penny in half in front of your face, once I talk about the infinity or whatever guarantee, you know, you'll be begging me, right, to have this heirloom piece for your home. So anyway, you hype the deal, you downplay the cost. One more example, you know, car lease commercials. I always think of this because here's this car that you have no business driving otherwise, right? You can't afford it, and yet they promise that for just a couple hundred dollars a month, you could actually drive this car. At the very end of those commercials, there is literally fine print on the screen at the very bottom. And if you have a magnifying glass and you can read really quickly, you discover, because it seems too good to be true, right? You discover, oh, the lease terms allow, like, you know, 5,000 miles a year and a $10,000 down payment. Okay, you know, not quite as good as I thought. So again, I'm going to entice you, I'm going to pull you in, I'm going to get you emotionally invested. You've got to have this thing, and then when I get to the fine print, you're already in too deep and it's too late. I say all that to say that Jesus takes the exact opposite approach. Jesus, he doesn't actually lead with all of the benefits of following him, which we would all agree there are many, we've experienced them. He doesn't lead with all the blessings and then kind of downplay the fine print. Like, oh, by the way, now that you can't back out of this, you know, you should probably know. He doesn't do that. He's totally upfront about the cost. Full disclosure, no surprises. So in Mark chapter 8, oh man, I forgot to say this funny thing. Don't you want to sit side by side next to your significant other in separate bathtubs watching the sunset? So you didn't even know you needed that until now, and now your life feels incomplete. All right, Mark chapter 8, verse 27. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am? Like, what's the word on the street about me?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, who had recently been beheaded, and some were saying was like back from the dead or something. Others say Elijah. Still others, one of the prophets." All these guys who had been dead for a long time. So apparently, reincarnation was a common belief in the first century. Verse 29, "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Now, Messiah is actually a Hebrew term, and it means the anointed one. So that is a loaded title throughout the Old Testament. And it would conjure up all kinds of imagery and expectations about this special person sent by God who is someday going to show up and work in a unique way in the world. When you translate the Hebrew word Messiah, or anointed one, when you translate that into Greek, which is the language of the New Testament originally, it's the word Christ. And so Messiah or Christ, that's actually a description. It's a description of Jesus' role. It's a title. So not his last name after all, which I think. So Peter says, I know. You're the one we've been waiting for. Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. Bingo, you're right. Now, shh. What? That's kind of weird, right? That Jesus would then tell him to, is he like embarrassed about this? Or does he not want people to know who he is? Is this like kind of a superhero thing where he's trying to keep his identity hidden from everybody else? No, the reason for Jesus' secrecy here is that, and Mark's getting ready to tell us, Jesus' identity as the Messiah is going to involve him, his death, and his resurrection. That, in other words, after that, the Messiah part for who Jesus is, that's going to make a lot more sense. The danger, I think Jesus is getting at, the danger of word getting out right now at this point, before he's done all of that, that he's the Messiah, is that people will have their own expectations, their own understandings of what the Messiah is going to be and do. And so they're going to try to force their agenda onto him, and dying was not anywhere on their list. And so that's the danger of word getting out too much before this. Verse 31, he then began to teach them that the Son of Man, that's him, must suffer many things. And they'd have been like, what? And be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Peter says, don't go all negative on us. You're the Messiah. You're not going to die. That wouldn't be very good for you. And come to think of it, that wouldn't be very good for me either. I mean, Jesus, look around. Things are going really, really good. We're famous. I mean, you're famous, but we're kind of famous. You're not going to be killed. That's ridiculous. Verse 33, but Jesus turned and looked at his disciples. When he turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. And that's pretty strong language, right? Part of that is Jesus, throughout his ministry, recognized that Satan would do anything to keep him from fulfilling this mission. And so he interprets this moment as that sort of temptation. I think beyond that, though, Peter phrases his objection out of concern for Jesus. But don't you think there's probably something in there where he was thinking about himself? I mean, we see later that's clearly an issue for him. He's worried about himself. He's worried about what's going to happen to him. And Jesus calls Peter out. He says, you know, you've had it pretty good, Peter. And you were a poor fisherman. And now everybody knows you. Following me has actually been pretty good for you. But Jesus says, you know what, Peter? Your problem is you're acting like a consumer. You're acting like following me is only about, you know, your preferences and what's in your best interest. But Peter, there's something much bigger going on here. God wants to do something for the whole world. Now Jesus sees the confusion in their eyes, and he calls for a meeting. Verse 34, then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, must tell themselves no, and take up their cross and follow me. So Jesus gives this picture of this metaphor of taking up our cross. And that's not a Jewish metaphor. That would have been really, really bizarre to them. He's evoking the image of a condemned man going out to die, who would be forced to carry like the vertical cross beam on which he would, you know, eventually be nailed to or hung on at the actual place of execution. And they've all seen this. It's a method of public execution that the Romans had pretty much perfected and reserved for the worst criminals, especially anyone they considered committing treason against Rome. Jesus goes on, he says, for whoever wants to save their life, anyone here? Me? Yes, please. I, for one, would like to save my life. Anyone, whoever wants to save their life, will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. That's pretty scary, isn't it? It's pretty sobering. And for the disciples, like the 12, I mean, all but one of them, that literally came true. They all literally gave their life for Jesus. Now, for you and for me, probably not so likely. Not as likely as it was for them. Probably not going to happen. But that's a scary thing to hear. Here's the brilliance of this, and I hope I can explain this. How many of you, when he says, whoever loses their life, how many of us are going to lose our life? Most of us? All of us are going to lose not just your life. Eventually, we lose everything that's important, everything that's dear to us, including our one and only precious life. We lose all of it in the end. So here's what Jesus is saying. If you go ahead and lose those things, and maybe it's your life, maybe it's something that's important to you, if you lose it now because of me, you actually gain something far greater. So if you come to a fork in the road because you're following me and you decide I'm going to say yes to Jesus and no to myself and you lose something precious to you, you haven't lost anything that you're not going to lose anyway someday. Like what looks like a loss now, because of Jesus is not just because of Jesus. I mean, ultimately, you lose it. And so what he's saying is I'm giving you a chance to lose the thing that you're going to lose. All of us are going to lose it. But to do that with purpose and with meaning. Now, I think it's really important that the crowd is here. At the beginning of verse 34, he purposely calls the crowd to listen. So this is not just the 12 guys, not just the core inner group, which means what Jesus says here is not just for church leaders or for missionaries or people like that in the future. He broadens his audience. He calls everyone in. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple. Whoever. Which means that anyone then, in that moment up till now, this is for anyone who decides to follow Jesus. Here's what he's saying. He's saying that those of us here today, and this is kind of a big deal that we understand, who wish to follow him, we actually have to shift the center of gravity of our lives from a concern for self, which is natural, to basically a reckless abandon to do the will of God. I mean, that's what self-denial is. It's a willingness to say no to yourself. And we've all agreed there are a lot of benefits and blessings that come with following Jesus. But he says here that you also have to be willing to put aside your interest, what's best for you in the moment in order to be willing to say yes to God. Even if that costs you something now. Even if Jesus says that actually costs you your life. Now, notice here that this is not like fine print that he sneaks in here at the end. I mean, the crowd who he's just called to himself, many, if not all of them, are hearing this. That's the first thing that they're hearing. Like right up front, Jesus gives the cost. He wants to be really clear. I think in many ways, this is the least manipulative invitation that's ever been given. Come and die. That's what he leads with. Now, imagine how shocking this would have been to them. You can't even get your mind around this. And so Jesus sees the look on their faces again. And, I mean, they're wondering, is this a good idea? Is this worth it? Like, is this going to be a good trade? And I would imagine many of them here are probably out. Like, the miracles have been cool and it's been interesting, but we're done. Jesus then broadens the context of his really alarming statement. Now, if you're here and you think there's nothing beyond this life, if you think there's nothing beyond the 70, 80, 90 years or however much you hopefully have here, then this next part is of no concern. You've got nothing to worry about but the present. And however much time you have left, preserving your life and hanging on until the clock runs out. But if you believe that you're not just a body, that you have a soul, that you have something that's like moving on to whatever is next, if that might even be a possibility, then what Jesus says next should mean something to you. Like it should carry some weight. He says, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit, that's to be fined, to give up, to lose, forfeit their soul? Which raises an interesting question. If you had the opportunity to have everything there is to have in this life, and you get it all at the exchange of your soul, would you do it? Now think about that. That includes a lot of stuff, right? Don't just dismiss that. It's a whole lot of interesting experiences and comforts and stuff and pleasure and power, whole lot of things wrapped up in that. It reminds me, I think this was originally a Kevin James joke. Money can't buy happiness, but it can buy you a jet ski. Have you ever seen anyone sad on a jet ski? Anyway, I thought that was funny. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, jet skis notwithstanding, whatever, and lose your soul? Jesus says, let me help you out. He says, or what can, and that could be translated, what would anyone give in exchange for their soul? If for some reason your soul was in jeopardy, think about that. How much of your stuff, your this world possessions and pleasure, experiences, how much of that would you then give at the end to get your soul out of danger? Like all of it? That's pretty easy, isn't it? I'd give all of it. Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said, earthly possessions dazzle our eyes and delude us into thinking that they can provide security and freedom from anxiety. Yet all the time, they are the very source of anxiety. Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. But back to Jesus, there wouldn't really be any amount of money or possessions or whatever that would be worth keeping at the expense of our soul. So if we've just, if we're willing to trade that all to ransom our soul, then I think we've answered his two questions. It's no good to gain the world. I'd give everything I have in exchange for my soul. Which means we've discovered that our souls have greater value than our things. That's important to realize. And Jesus was pretty smart. And I wouldn't have thought to say it like that, but now that you mention it, that's true of me. It's no good to gain the world and lose my soul because I would give it all back in a second at the end if I could to get it back. My soul is more valuable than everything in the world. Jesus says, deny yourself now or lose yourself later. Okay, Jesus, what's your point with all this? Verse 38, if anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, he says some people are going to be afraid of being associated with me, like having to identify with me, because that means that they're going to have to give up some things from this world that they've gained. And that phrase there, this adulterous and sinful generation, that comes up throughout the Bible. Whenever it occurs, it's always in reference to idolatry, to considering something more important than God. If anyone's ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man, Jesus talking about himself, will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. In other words, there is going to be, and this is not my words, this is Jesus, there is going to be a day of reckoning. That's what Jesus says. That he will return someday, not just as Messiah, not just as Lord, but as judge, to set things straight, as the creeds affirm. He will come again to judge the living and the dead. And I know for us today, we hear that and we wonder, come on. I mean, really? Is he really coming back? Because that's really difficult to imagine. But then again, he told them he was going to be arrested, and he was. He told them he was going to be beaten, and he was. He told them he was going to be killed. Guess what? He was. He pulled off the resurrection, which he also predicted. And so maybe, just maybe, he's going to be right about this too. So just something to think about. I'm fairly certain, though, that the crowd listening to Jesus talk, that most of them walked away. Like, this is too much. There's another passage in John 6 where Jesus feeds the crowd because they're really hungry, and he's teaching them, and there's no food anywhere. The feeding of the 5,000. And right after this, people are kind of hanging around Jesus because guess what? They've just received something from him. They've received, you know, this benefit, and they're starting to think, well, there's something here for me. I mean, maybe Jesus can, like, help me, and I can get more from him. And Jesus recognizes, I mean, right away where this is going. He says, I got to put a stop to this. He says some really hard things like this about what it means to follow him, that it's not just about us being consumers. And then it says that almost everybody walks away. That didn't take very long. Like, on the spot, people abandon Jesus. So many, in fact, Jesus turns to the 12 who are still standing there, awkwardly watching everybody else leave, and he says to them, you guys don't want to leave too, do you? just this heartbreaking scene. Here's what this all comes down to. At some point in your journey, following Jesus will cost you something. It's the fine print that's really not so subtle. That salvation is free, that grace and mercy and forgiveness and all these things we get from Jesus, no cost to you. But actually following Jesus at some point will cost us. I think for many of us, this call to take up our cross, like many of us, we've heard this before, and we wrestle with, what does that look like in our context? What does it even mean for us? When Jesus is saying this for the very first time, they quickly find out exactly what that means, don't they? Because again, all of them, most of them, you know, literally died. What does that mean for us? Even the people reading Mark a few decades later, it's the, you know, the church has begun. But even from the beginning, people, believers, because of Jesus, are being persecuted and scattered. And it was not uncommon for you as a believer to be arrested, brought before someone in power and said, you know, deny Christ and you walk away. You're free. Go home and be with your family. Refuse to do this and you're going to be punished or even killed. And even today in our world, there are places where this same persecution and opposition is happening. So this is a tough passage for us, isn't it? If we're being honest, what does this mean? The good news is you will probably not have to die for your faith. But you will be called to die to some things because of your faith. That there will come a day, there will come maybe a season in your life where following Jesus will cost you. Now, I don't think that this means that we have to go around looking for like a cross to bear. This is important. I don't think it means we have to feel guilty if you are in a place in your life right now where things are going pretty well. I think if that's the case, be grateful for where you are in this moment. I think that was kind of the mistake of the mystics in the early centuries, the ascetics, who they thought, if I'm not suffering and experiencing persecution because of external things, like if I've got it okay, then I need to find a way to punish myself and to make it really rough on myself. That's not at all what Jesus is saying. He's saying that there will come a time as you have shifted your center of gravity from all about you, all about me, to saying yes to God, that there will come a time when it means doing something difficult that he wants, that you'll have to say no to yourself in order to say yes to him. I mean, you realize that believing is pretty painless. Church attendance is actually pretty painless. I mean, depending on where you go, right? But eventually, he's saying eventually there will be a cost. And you're not going to get anything back. Except the satisfaction of knowing that you said yes to him. Except the peace that comes from knowing you did the right thing. And here's the tricky thing for us. It may not be something that everybody else has to do. This thing for you. It may not be something everyone else has to stop doing. It may not even be something that everybody agrees is the right thing or the next thing that has to be done or not done. It is going to be something that happens inside of you, in your conscience, as a Jesus follower. You're going to say, you know what? This is for me, but I can't go. I can't participate in that. I got to leave. I'm not going to call that person back. I can't take the job. I really shouldn't. I have the sense I shouldn't take the promotion because of my commitment to Jesus and the things that he's shaping in my life. So you're just going to know. So you can relax about that. You're going to know. It's not going to be a verse, and there's not going to be a sermon. You're going to go, oh, this is that moment where I have to decide, am I a Jesus consumer or am I a Jesus follower? And you will recognize that from that point on, it's going to cost you something. It's going to feel like a right or wrong thing. It's going to feel like maybe you've got to give up a dream or a relationship that you thought was going somewhere and you recognize it's not. It's going to be the closing of a door. It will be a significant moment in your walk with Jesus. And here's the thing. If you decide to say no to yourself and yes to Jesus, you'll discover something that you can only discover this way. You can't discover this any other way. In this moment, you will discover whose you really are. And your faith will begin to grow, and this stuff will go from like your head and your heart, and it'll become more and more tangible. And you'll be rejected by men, perhaps, as Jesus calls it. But you'll be free all at the same time. And as difficult as these moments are, as challenging, as agonizing, and like emotional as it can be, these are some of the ways that God changes us and grows us the most. It's kind of scary, though, isn't it? If you're not scared, maybe I could go back and read. It's scary. And I get that. I think Jesus understands that. I mean, if you're here and you're under like 25, you have your whole life ahead of you. And so I understand that the tendency to say, I'm going to wait till I'm like 70. Because what kind of trouble can I get in when I'm 70, right? So I'm just going to, I think I'll just wait until later. And that's a totally logical thought. I understand that. That's why some of you left the church or you haven't been around church for a long time. Because it costs too much to follow Jesus. And you understand a plain reading of this, you come away with that. And so you think to yourself, I'll get back to this later. I recognize that there are people here who have other questions you're wrestling with and sort of intellectual barriers to your faith. And first of all, we're glad that you're here and we hope you keep wrestling. But others of you, if you're really honest, it's not that you don't believe. It's that you just don't want to say no to you. And I understand that. And I think Jesus understands that. And so yes, there are huge advantages that come with following Jesus. Every once in a while, though, you're going to have to say no to you. And I just want you to be prepared for that. You have to say no to you, and it's going to cost you. Some of you here, you know this, speaking of cost, you know this firsthand, literally with your finances. Because your understanding of what it means to follow Jesus means that you want to become a more and more generous person. And so some of you, you give, and it's not just like a $20, you know, every once in a while. You give systematically a percentage of your income. And that number at the end of the year, it's significant. It costs you. Others of you, you've made decisions in relationships. You've had to end relationships because you felt like this relationship was clearly pulling you away from God. And it was excruciatingly difficult. Perhaps others of you have had situations where you're at work and everyone's kind of doing the thing and you felt like that's not what Jesus would do. That's compromising who you are at your core and what he's about. And so you've had to kind of be that person who raises their hand very awkwardly and says, I can't participate. I can't do this. I have a friend who was on a work trip not that long ago and they were, you know, having dinner and getting drinks afterward. And at some point, the other guys that he was with were like, well, time to head to the strip clubs. You coming? And just, it sort of feels like high school, right? And this guy's 30-something years old. And he said, no, you know, I can't do that. And they kind of gave him a hard time, and they took off, and my friend, you know, walked back to his hotel and spent the night in his room, sitting there by himself. At some point, following Jesus will cost you, and you know when that is. I want to invite the band to come on up. We're going to spend some time here reflecting here in just a moment, but here's the point. Salvation is free. It costs nothing. But following Jesus will eventually cost you something. And you'll know. You'll think, oh, that's that thing they were talking about. This is that whole, I can't say yes to myself and to Jesus. I've got to say no to somebody in this situation. And when that time comes, I hope that you're ready. That you'll do the right thing. Because if you do, you'll come out the other side with stronger faith, with more resolve, and you'll have a story to tell. As we wrap this up, I just want to say this. It's possible that somebody here is kind of in shock right now, in a room this size, because you are on the verge of a decision. Like right now, you've got the text that you haven't responded to. You've got the email waiting for you at home, the decision to make. You've got to decide this week. And before you came in here, you were already nudged to do something, to say something, to stop doing, to start doing something else, to give something up. You already knew before you even came in here. And you've shared this with your friends, people close to you. You shared your dilemma. And because they're your friends, you know what they do? It's no big deal. It's not a big deal at all. It's like, I mean, the world's not black and white. Just relax. You're fine. But I suspect part of that is the fact that your willingness to even stop and ask the question, that shines a big old spotlight onto them, doesn't it? That you're willing to do that. And so sometimes people give us advice because they want to tell us to do what they would do if they were in our shoes, because that just relieves that tension. The point is, though, you know. You know what you're supposed to do. And so I just want to encourage you, since you've already decided that your soul has greater value than whatever it is you're being offered. You've already decided that. It's not a coincidence that you're here and that I'm talking about this. You know that God has been faithful to you in the past, and that someday this will be a story that you tell. My question is, what story do you want to tell? It's going to be the story of, I could not say no to me, or, you know what, I decided to say yes to Jesus. It's going to be the story of, I couldn't say yes to Jesus, decided to say yes to him. So as you identify that thing, the question is, what story do you want to tell? One final thought. Do you know what happened to all the people in the crowd that day who freaked out when Jesus told them the cost, and then they like, we're done, we're out, never mind, and they walked away? Do you know what happened to them? Me neither. I have no idea. I'm guessing this, though, that post-resurrection, when Jesus appears to the 500, Paul says in Corinthians, when you know all these things are happening, the church is beginning, I bet there were at least some of them who would have given anything in that moment to go back to this time standing with Jesus and say, okay, you're right, I'm in. Whatever it takes, I am in. I'm willing to say yes to you. I'll lose whatever it is, because I'm going to lose it anyway, in order to gain something from you that cannot be taken away. Salvation is free. It doesn't cost a thing. But following Jesus will eventually, at points, cost you something. And whatever that cost is, my hunch is that refusing to follow Jesus, that's actually going to cost us a lot more in the grand scheme of things in the end. Would you stand with me? We'll pray. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would help each one of us to know what to do with this, where you're speaking to us. Lord, there are those of us here in this room, we've immediately identified the fork in the road because we're right at it. We've got to decide, are we going to say yes to you or yes to ourselves? Lord, give us the courage to say yes to you, to trust you with that decision, with that relationship, with that opportunity. Help us to trust you. Lord, as we step more fully into this life that you want to give us, life that is truly life, I pray that we would experience all the benefits of that, the joy and the peace, the security that we have in you. But in these crucial moments, I pray that you would help us to have the courage to follow you wherever you're leading, to pay whatever cost it is you're asking us to pay. And in so doing, may we gain your life that cannot be taken away. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.